Welcome to the Human Kindness at Work podcast, where you'll hear inspiring stories of people just like you making a difference in their corner of the world. You'll hear how human kindness is at work and how you can be a part of it. I'm Jennifer Clark. Ready to be inspired? Here we go. We are just about to enter the holiday season here in the United States. And for a lot of us, it's a time that we think intentionally about giving. What if our individual giving could be multiplied for an even greater impact? My guest today knows exactly how to do that. Lori Richter is a wife and mom, an author, a public speaker, travel enthusiast, and the co-founder and vice president of the 100 Who Care Alliance. She has a big heart for making a difference in the world around her, but specifically for the world that's closest to her, leading women in North Suburban Chicago to make a difference with their collective generosity. Welcome to the podcast, Lori Richter.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Very happy to have you here. I have a personal connection to the 100 Who Care Alliance that we'll get into in a little bit. But for listeners who have never heard of the 100 Who Care Alliance, can you just briefly explain the concept of the 100 Who Care Alliance?
Yes. We are a large group or network of giving circles. And very simply, the idea is we can do more together. When we pool our donations together, we can make a much bigger difference. And just a quick example, if you give $100 to a charity, you don't know what happens to it, and you don't feel like it's really doing much, and you never find out. But if you give $100 with 100 other people, $10,000 is a lot of money. And it can make a really big difference. It can allow a nonprofit to do something that they only had on their wish list forever. And you're still doing the same thing, but you're part of something much bigger. So that's the whole idea behind 100 Who Care Alliance.
Yeah. And how long ago did it start?
We started in 2014. And at the time, every circle just formed organically. They heard about it from somebody and they started, and everybody was independent. And a couple of us got together and started just talking online and saying, wouldn't it be great if we could get together, if we could actually meet and share, you know, best practices and whine about all the things that were driving us crazy and whatever. And we just contacted the 60 or 70 circles we knew of. And we said, if 25 people are willing to show up, we're willing to create a conference. And that's what happened. We had about 70 people say they would come. And we had our first conference in 2015 in Chicago, and that's when we became the 100 Who Care Alliance. Mm-hmm. And we've had every two or three years since then, we've had a conference. And so we've been around now for, I guess, about 12, 13 years. And all volunteer, all, you know, it's a passion project for everybody who's involved in it. But we just keep growing. I mean, there's about 800 circles now, mostly in the U.S. and Canada, and a few in other parts of the world that have found out about us. And that's kind of the history.
That's awesome. And you lead a group yourself. You lead a giving circle in North Chicago, correct?
Right. I actually lead two. I lead one in North Suburban Chicago, which I've led since 2014, and one in a small town in Mexico where I have a home also. And this one started about a year ago. So, you know, it's an idea that can be anywhere, can be mm-hmm. implemented anywhere. All you need is a few people and a place to get together. And, you know, you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm. I also co-lead a 100 Who Care group. But we, and you'll notice this if listeners go to the Alliance website that we'll have in the show notes, some people get together not by location, but by their job, their vocation, their profession. And so I lead a group of voice actors, since I'm a voice actor, and we're all over the United States right now, but we meet virtually. So that's another option too, which I'm sure during COVID that was happening as well.
Right.
But there's so many options, right, to gather people together for collective generosity.
And there are business-to-business groups. There are teenage groups. There are children's groups. They don't necessarily have money, but they give volunteer time, perhaps. And women's groups, mixed-gender groups, you know, you name it, we've got everything. And most meet in person because for most of them, it's a geography issue. It's a local local giving. But anything goes. We don't have hard and fast rules. We have a basic model that works, and then we just tell our circles, go do, you know, whatever works in your community, you know better than we do. So just go adapt whatever, you know, whatever you learn from us, go adapt it to what is going to work for you.
Yeah, I love that. I think I read on your LinkedIn bio that one of your members' husbands started a group.
This is a long, long time ago, and actually it's not running yet, it's not running at this point. But yeah, one of the women in my group went home after the first meeting and told her husband about it, and he started a group. And, you know, that's kind of the way they all start. Somebody hears about it, and it just sparks an idea in them, and they just go start one themselves.
Yeah. What was the name of his group, though?
It was, I think, 100 Men Who Care 110% More or something like that.
Yeah, you know? 100 Men Who Care 10% More, because they gave $110 each time instead of 100.
Right. But the women's group is still around.
Oh, well.
Later, the men's group is not. So there you go.
I love a little healthy competition. So I think any kind of, you know, prompting toward generosity is a good thing. I got a kick out of that name. Okay. So 100 Who Care Circles take this really simple idea, bringing people together to give locally, they turn it into something powerful. Why do you think this model resonates so deeply with people and with communities?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I'm going to try to answer that two ways. One is for the leaders, and the other is for the members. And I think for the leaders, it's a process that has absolutely no obstacles. You know, there are no barriers to entry. You don't have to have a lot of money. You don't have to have any kind of a degree or experience at it. All you have to have is, you could do it yourself if you wanted, but all you really have to have is a couple of friends who are willing to go on the journey with you, and you have to find a place to meet. And that is literally all you have to do. And then you collect a bunch of friends and family. Some of them will want to join, some of them might not. And that's it. So I think, and for most of the leaders, they want to do something. They're very connected to their communities, and you know, they're not really sure what to do, and they hear about this and they think, I can do this. This doesn't sound very hard. So, you know, that's kind of the leader's reason why they get started. And for the members, I think there's a lot of reasons, but I'll be, you know, brutally honest with you. I think a lot of people, they kind of want to do something, but they don't want to put a lot of time, money, or energy into it.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to feel like they're doing something. And when this comes along and they only have to put in $100 once a quarter, so $400 a year, and meet an hour. And in fact, if they can't meet, they don't even meet. They just make sure they donate. In my case, we do some in person, but always on Zoom also. So it doesn't matter where you are when a meeting happens. If you have an hour, you can hop on Zoom and participate and vote. And so it becomes a really easy, effective, quick way for people who don't have a lot of time or perhaps even, you know, motivation to get involved otherwise, you know, to do something. And I think another reason people get involved besides the money is they really want to learn about the local charities. They want to do something and they don't know what's out there and they don't know which ones are sort of legitimate and which ones aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And this way they get exposure and they meet people that are contact people for that charity. And often I'll have people in the group that will then make that connection and they'll become volunteers. They'll sit on the board. They'll become fundraisers for an organization. So I think that's another reason people join. And again, it's easy. They don't have to do much.
Yeah. It's one of the things I love the most about it, because I really believe that most people want to make a difference, but it feels overwhelming to look at the huge problems that everybody is dealing with. And you just wonder, can my $100 actually put a drop in the bucket, you know, make a drop in the bucket? That it doesn't feel like it. And so I think a lot of times people just throw their hands up in the air and say, well, I'll just keep it because I don't know where to give. I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. And so this is a very easy solution.
There's a very small thing we do, but I think it makes a big difference, which is at each meeting, we have the recipient from the previous meeting's award come back and talk to us about what they did with the award. And it kind of closes the circle for people. They actually hear what happened with their money. And it's always much bigger than they could have done if they gave their $100.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, by themselves. So I think it's very gratifying to feel like I didn't have to do a lot or pay a lot, but look what got accomplished.
Yeah.
That's a big part of kind of, you know, rationalizing why it's really worth to do collective giving as opposed to just being, you know, writing $100 checks to all your friends' favorite charities.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. From your perspective, what do you think is the biggest difference between giving alone and giving collectively? Like, what happens when people come together around generosity?
Right. Well, again, what you end up with, the result, is so much more than what you could do by yourself, even though what you're individually doing is exactly the same. So, and it's also very social. It's usually like-minded people. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't necessarily fund the same things, because the thing that draws us, most of us, together is geography. It's the same area. We want to support our community, but you may love pets and somebody else may not, or, you know, you may have a really soft spot in your heart for education. Somebody else may not, but we also agree, this is the basic philosophy of the whole organization. We all agree that the will of the group will determine what we do, and we make a commitment to mm-hmm. support the will of the group, even if it's not what we personally would choose.
Yeah.
And that's really powerful. That, you know, that tells people that there is something to the group that is really important and that can move things that, again, you couldn't do yourself.
Mm-hmm. So
it's really lovely to see. And very rarely in all the years I've been doing this have I had somebody come up to me and say, I just can't do that one. Mm-hmm. I can't support it. It doesn't work that way. If you just want to come and go when you like the charity, we sort of tell you this isn't the group for you.
Yeah.
There are others that you can support, but this isn't the one.
Yeah. Is there a particular story of impact, maybe from one of your local groups or from the broader alliance, that has really stayed with you and captures what collective generosity means?
Yeah, I have one that I really like. I don't, you know, who knows why, there have been so many wonderful ones over the years, but there is a woman in my group who has a son who is on the spectrum. And so she was very frustrated, got him through college, but then he was not really employable because mm-hmm. you know, social skills were not exactly what an employer would want, et cetera. And so she and her husband started their own nonprofit. They found a model somewhere in Scandinavia, and they started a nonprofit where they went out and sought contracts to do software testing, which is very tedious and requires, you know, a lot of concentration, and perfectly suited for her, you know, the handicap that her son had, and started very small. And one of the reasons I use this story a lot is because it's a perfect example of how so many great nonprofits start. Somebody has a need yeah. in their own life, in their own family, and they can't figure out how to get it addressed. And they just finally throw their hands up and say, I guess I have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so they started this organization, and they just had a couple of her son and a couple of others, and they were doing very well. And I think we gave them about $13,000. And it was, you know, the first or second year, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for them, it was an enormous amount of money. It allowed them to hire a part-time person to, you know, to help the employees they currently had. And the other thing it did was it kind of put them on the map, because prior mm-hmm. to that, they were not necessarily seen as they were a risk. They were new. Nobody knew if it was going to work out. But when a group of people in the community kind of puts their dollars behind it, and it's sort of a reinforcement for who they are.
Yeah.
And then funders, you know, that were on the sidelines suddenly came out.
Mm.
And, you know, they're much bigger now. They have a couple offices. I mean, they're only limited by how many people they can find to train and teach. And they have a lot of parts to their program, not just as an employer, but also they have a social component for, you know, they have all kinds of activities for the young adults that work there. And, you know, they have full benefits. So they lead regular, wonderful adult lives. Their clients love them because they're so conscientious. And, you know, it was all because one woman had a need and, you know, found us at the right time. I mean, she's been a member since the beginning, and she's still a member. She's mm-hmm. retired from the position now, but she has an executive director that runs it. And, you know, it's just a great example of what happened when we each just put in our $100.
That's awesome.
Not, and it makes a really big difference.
Yeah, that is awesome. That reminds me of just that ripple effect of kindness, that you have no idea what's going to happen when you put your $100 into your Giving Circle group. But that's an incredible ripple effect. Have you seen any other examples of that human kindness ripple effect Because that's what 100 Who Care is really about. It's just human kindness in action, right? So have you seen that in other ways in people's lives, either in your group or in the community at large, not just in the meetings themselves?
Well, a lot of volunteerism comes out of this. As I mentioned before, people will learn about charities and then something will just, you know, it will just resonate with them. And the next thing you know, they become very involved, which is, you know, part of why they got involved with us in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a, you know, that's a wonderful thing to watch. Mm-hmm. And do I have any other good examples? You know, nothing I can think of offhand, but oftentimes these, like I have one group that came forward multiple times and didn't get the award multiple times. And I remember having a conversation with them about, you know, how do you kind of find the courage to keep coming up here when this is, you know, for whatever reason, our group is not inclined to support you. And she said a husband of one person in the group got very involved with them when after they heard about them and is a much bigger financial, you know, benefactor for her than we ever could have done. Mm. And only, you know, it just kind of goes out, even if it wasn't from us specifically.
Yeah.
It went out, you know, through his wife into the greater world, and he's been very involved with them ever since. And I don't even think we hear half of those stories.
No.
And I'm going to share one other thing, which is has nothing to do with the actual money, but the empowerment of the people in the group because of their involvement. Because mm-hmm. women will get up, or men in men's groups will get up and present something that really matters to them. But they're not people that are public speakers. They're not people that are comfortable in front of people. It just matters enough that they do it.
Yeah.
And then they get the award. And it's like they're changed people, you know, because they did something they never thought they would be able to do for something that mattered a lot to them. And I've seen that happen many times. And it's really one of my favorite things about running the group. And it has nothing to do really even with the money, but has more to do with what it does for the individual people involved.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, I have seen that too in our group, and it's a beautiful thing to witness. And you get to know that person then. You're getting to know a little bit of their heart, and it just creates more of a bond and a friendship, and that like-heartedness, you know, comes together.
I don't think people have a lot of opportunities to do things like that where they're willing to take the leap, and the risk is just not that great. If you know, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't really matter, but it's very heartwarming.
So the 100 Who Care Alliance has, you said, about 800 giving circles globally. What have you learned about leading and sustaining a movement like this?
That's just such a good question. Okay, so the first thing I would say is, and I had nothing to do with the development of this idea, so I'm bragging for somebody else, not for me. It's a brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. Somebody came up with. And I worked in market research for a very long time, and I tested all kinds of products and packages and advertising, and everybody's always looking for the magic bullet to bring something to people and have them go, aha, that's great. And this is one of those ideas that is just that. And we don't have to work hard at it. People, they get it right away. They get excited about it. They go start it. We don't have to advertise. We don't have to do anything. So one of the things I've learned right away is if you have something that's really good in your pocket, get out of the way.
Yeah.
just let it work and it'll do its thing. And then because probably one of the toughest challenges for those of us who are running the Alliance has always been finding this balance between trying to improve, you know, the lives of our members and our groups and making things easier for them and more efficient, et cetera, but not overstepping and becoming infrastructure and bureaucracy because the simplicity of this model that makes it so wonderful.
Yeah, that's how it works.
The groups can work independently. So we're always trying to find little ways where we can help and, you know, nudge along but never overstep because they don't want that. Mm-hmm. So we have been very careful. I mean, we're not a rules organization. We're not, you know, there's nothing other than sort of advocacy and trying to give you information and connect you so that you can have other circle leaders to talk to and, you know, get good ideas and get problem solutions. A lot of what we do is share problems. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people will pipe in, here's how I did that. Here's how I did that. So that's been an interesting leadership issue also, because it's really about finding the balance, you know, of inserting ourselves, but pulling back and making sure that we're not getting in people's way.
Yeah. I'm going to throw this at you because there might be listeners who are, their interest is piqued and they might think, I want to either join or start, like lead an organization, you know, if they don't have a giving circle in their area or within their profession. And be real here. How much time are you giving as a leader to right. leading one of your groups? Because right. I think that that is another thing that people, it's a barrier that people come up against, you know, right. how much, right. it's not just money, but how much time am I offering as well?
Right. And part of that depends on how you structure your group, because some people have a steering committee where all different people have different responsibilities. Mm-hmm. You know, I tend to be one of those people that just does a lot myself, but I love my group and they're sort of my brain trust. But I would say if you're meeting four times a year, which is what most of us are doing, there are probably around the meeting time, there's, you know, probably a couple days where you're putting in just organizational work. And then after the meeting as well, it only really takes me a day after the meeting. So mm-hmm. there are little peak times during the year, but the rest of the time, your time is your own. Yeah. I am a huge traveler. One of the things that attracted me so much to this was that I knew it wasn't going to impinge on my freedom mm-hmm. to just pick up and go somewhere for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So it really, you know, in the beginning, the planning, you get together, you know, you might spend a fair amount of time discussing how do you want to do this? How do you want to do that? We have a lot of resources on the Alliance website to help people do that. But the time commitment is really not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually, I'm here in Mexico right now because we had our meeting this past week, and we have our meeting this week in Chicago. And between the two, I'm going to make this up. I probably put in about 20 hours.
Okay. Maybe. For the quarter.
Yeah, for the quarter.
Yeah.
The Alliance is another story, but mm-hmm. it's really not hard. And yeah. again, we try to give you templates so that a lot of it is already there. It's kind of boilerplate. You adapt it to what you need. But it's not hard.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, going out and finding the people and then coming back every quarter. You do always have to look for new people. It's a leaky bucket like anything else is. Mm-hmm. People come, they go, they come, they go. And I do want to mention one thing because it always comes up is that people always tend to think you have to have 100 people to do the, you know, to do this group. And the yeah. whole idea of that name, when it was named that, was just the idea of it's aspirational that 100 people who give $100 mm-hmm. is $10,000. It gets you right. to five figures. It doesn't matter if you have 5 people or 300 people. Mm-hmm. You're still raising money and giving it to somebody who didn't have it before you raised it. So start small. That's fine. Plenty of our groups are in the 30 to 50 range
mm-hmm.
and they kind of stay that way and it's easy to manage and they're still giving money away. Mm-hmm. So you know, if people are interested, I don't want them to get hung up on the idea that I don't know how to find 100 people.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. One more question, just logistically. How does your group handle the donations, the financial aspect?
Oh, that's a really good question. When I started, it was all checks. That's all there was. There, you know, everybody brought a check to the meeting. Now there are platforms out there. Up till now, they have all been third-party platforms where they are actually 501c3 charities. So we all give our money to them. We, you know, you go on the platform with a credit card and you give the money to them. And then we point it to wherever we tell them we want it mm-hmm. to go to. We have worked with 3 or 4 different ones. And over time, we found that complicated because they don't always even want to stay in the business if they decide it's not right for them. And they don't necessarily set things up the way we need them. And, you know, we're one player of many, so we really can't make changes. So one of the things, the big project right now for the Alliance is we're developing our own payment platform.
That's awesome.
And our circles will be able to go on and it will be set up the same way. We just applied for 501c3 status and, you know, they'll put their money on our platform, tell us where to send it, mm-hmm. and we'll send it. But, you know, and right now, actually today, I'm in another Zoom call with our circle leaders. We've asked several, you know, probably up to 100 of our circle leaders to come on and talk to us about what they want, what their experience mm-hmm. has been, what's worked, what hasn't, what their wish list is. And, you know, we'll try to come as close as we can to create that. So it's much easier now for that reason, because mm-hmm. you make a payment. You can set it up to be recurring. So every 3 months, it'll get charged. And then as a circle leader, you don't have to be nagging people all the time.
Right.
That's one of the hardest parts of running this is getting the donations, collecting mm-hmm. the donations. There's always, you know, 95% of the people are wonderful and the other 5% make you work for it.
Uh-huh.
So that's, you know, it's one of the things, if we can reduce some of the friction in that part of it, we really want to try to do that for our members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would echo everything you're saying. I've only led for the past year, but I've been a part of the group for since its inception. But having a third party handle all of the financial pieces is such a lifesaver, a time saver, and just you can operate with integrity then. Then you know 100% of every donation is going exactly to that nonprofit, you know, that we as leaders aren't getting any money or your little giving circle isn't collecting pennies or anything.
Right.
So it's a beautiful model. Really love it.
It's changed. I mean, there are groups that still only collect checks. They started that way. There are other groups where they will go on the, they will direct their members to go on the website of the nonprofit they just chose. They'll make an individual donation there and then they'll send them the receipt, you know, back to the circle mm-hmm. so that they get credit for it. I think myself that it's a lot of work for the circle
yeah.
leader. Some prefer to do it that way. The other nice thing about the platforms is it's one big donation from our group and
right.
no individual contact information gets out.
Yeah.
We promise to our members that you're not going to be solicited from this. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get every 2 months, you know, people calling you and sending you emails for more money. And that's one way to protect people's information is
right.
to have it go on this credit card platform. And then they get one big donation from
yeah.
whatever 100 Who Care group it is.
But then givers still get that tax deductible receipt at the end of the year individually, which.
Yeah, the tax deductible receipt is actually from the platform because mm-hmm. they're 501c3.
Right.
But we also still, we usually ask the nonprofits to send a letter. And actually, I just have them send me a PDF of a letter that acknowledges and thanks them for it.
Mm.
And, you know, the real thing that they need if they need something for taxes is coming from the third party platform or mm-hmm. When we get ours up.
Mm-hmm.
But people still like to have that letter in their hand.
Yeah.
You know, technically, if it's under a $250 donation, you don't really need anything, but mm-hmm. people still like to have it. So.
Yeah.
We make sure that they have something and make it easy on the nonprofit. Just send it to me and I'll send it out to all my members that donated.
That's
and then
idea.
They don't have to go do all the letters and all the stamps and all that kind of stuff.
Well, if people want to learn more about the 100 Who Care Alliance or find a giving circle near them or start a giving circle, where can they find you online?
So 100whocarealliance.org is the website. And there is a link there to start a chapter. So if you were inclined to start your own, we have all kinds of resources. There is also a directory, and that's another project we just completed this year, where any circles that are in our network have their own page, and they have all kinds of information. Right? You know, who have they funded? How often do they meet? Who, you know, is it women? Is it men? Who is it? Where exactly is it? So you can search by location, and you know, you can join one. Or if you don't find one near you, we're always happy to help. It's really not hard to start one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really rewarding. It's a fun project to do with your friends. So we're out there. We'd love to hear from you. The more the merrier. Not a problem if there's more than one in one location, because we all have different networks and friend groups. So, you know, there's probably five around my North Suburban Chicago one within a couple of miles.
That's
and it
wonderful.
Just doesn't matter. We all find our own people.
Mm. Well, Lori, thank you for being with us today and just for your leadership, you know, in inspiring collective generosity and asking a little bit more of us. I think we can all answer that call. So listeners, just as you're preparing to enter the new year, I highly encourage you to check out the 100 Who Care Alliance. See if there's a group near you. See if you can link arms with someone in your community to make a difference in the new year. So thank you, Lori, again for being here. We appreciate
thank you
your
for
time.
The opportunity to spread the word, because when people hear about it, they get interested.
Yeah, very happy to give you a voice. All right, take care, Lori. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. Just a heads up. season one is going to be wrapping up soon. December 1st will be our last new episode for this season. We'll be taking a little break over the holidays and preparing for more great stories to share in season two. Until next time, keep an eye out for human kindness at work around you. Whether it's big or small, it all matters. See you next time.